So I read this very interesting article the other day called "Where is the RPO Industry Headed?" It was written by Steve O'Brien, who happened to be one of my LinkedIn contacts. I reached out to him, and he said this.
Hey, my name's Steve O'Brien. I'm the president of staffing and talent solutions at job.com. I help us grow our mid-market agency base, and I work to write the algorithms that help change the way that recruiters make decisions.
Actually, he said more than that, a lot more. We talked about his article. We talked about the history of RPO. We talked about the future of RPO. And I thought, man, this is a great conversation. We should bring in our CEO, Will Staney, in on this. And he said, cool. And I said, cool. And so we all got on the phone and I recorded it. And that brings us to this podcast. And you'll hear our conversation, or actually, you hear Steve and Will's conversation about the history of RPO and the future of the RPO industry right after I say, Ms. Courtney being on this podcast with me. There, I said it. The rest you'll hear right after this. You are listening to Tribe Pod, a podcast series of interviews of interest to the HR community. It is hosted by Courtney Lane, produced by Jim Stroud, sponsored by Proactive Talent, and enjoyed by you. Today's episode begins right after this.
On-demand recruiting is an hourly service that we offer where our recruiters work as an extension of your business, helping to fill your positions by finding top talent.
So, on-demand recruiting is there to address issues in hiring when a company is experiencing a lot of growth, when they're having some seasonality changes, where they may temporarily need to expand their recruiting team. You maybe have a new line of business or a space where you're expanding your business and you need to bring in specialty expertise to help fill those niche roles that your internal team may not yet be ramped up on.
Proactive Talent's on-demand recruiting solution is quite different from a lot of the other models that you're going to see in the workplace. Whereas you're going to pay a contingency recruiting firm, typically on average around 20%, sometimes up to 30% of the first year salary of the person that you hire. And in that same period of time, you'll spend less than a quarter of that with Proactive Talent's managed on-demand recruiting solution.
For more information on Proactive Talent, visit them online at proactivetalent.com or click the link in the podcast description. And now we transition into a conversation between Will Staney, CEO of Proactive Talent, and our guest, Steve O'Brien.
Yeah, for sure. So my background, Will, is I'm a recruiter. I always tell people I'm a recruiter. I got into it accidentally, like a lot of us do, right? My story was I was on my way to law school. I met a woman who's too good for me, so I abandoned all of my plans, dropped out of law school, chased her around the world, and now she's my wife and the mother of my children. So it worked out fine. But at the time, it seemed like a very dubious decision. And with an undergraduate degree in philosophy, I needed a place that was sort of flexible on qualifications. And recruiting was one where, if you were good, it didn't matter. I mean, I could have studied turf grass management, and it doesn't matter. And that was really what got me interested in it. But then what kept me interested in it was my first placement was a guy named Sridhar. And I worked at an agency, and I remember thinking, licking my lips and rubbing my hands, thinking about my commission. And I went out to lunch with him, and he brought his wife and kids. And his wife said that I changed their life, that Sridhar had been out of work. And as a 22-year-old snot-nosed kid worried about a commission check, it was emotionally overwhelming, right? I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm sitting here thinking about me and I'm affecting other people. And that brew was too potent to put down. I was like, I need to be a part of this for the rest of my life. So I worked on the agency side for years and then started getting into RPO probably around 2007. And I started to hear more customers open to this idea of like project recruiting. And I know it started before then, but it caught my attention then. And then in 2010, I joined Conexa because RPO was absolutely a thing and it was big and it was growing fast. So my point of view on RPO is, the dot-com bubble and the major destruction to corporate budgets that we saw coming after that opened up people's minds to the idea of bundling services and looking at larger recruitment projects as a way to manage cost and have access to infrastructure without the hard cost to staff. And then it grew until I'd say around 2007 and 8, when all of a sudden we started playing with new language and saying, well, what are we going to call this? This isn't agency staffing. It's not just project staffing. And, you know, recruitment process outsourcing and all that nomenclature started to become a bit more common. And then you saw the early leaders, right? You saw, I mean, if you guys remember like the Right Thing, right? I love the Right Thing because they help make the market. I hate the Right Thing because I think they obliterated our price points. But, yeah. You know, you had the Right Thing and Conexa and Future Step and all these companies out there saying, okay, here we are. AMS, right, an amazing provider, came out and started to solidify what is this RPO thing that we're doing. So, I mean, that's my point of view.
Yeah no, I just hearing sort of your story and how you view the market is just really interesting to me because, you know, whereas I listen to you and I feel like I'm listening to a professor of RPO who saw that. And I am merely a student I'm actually seeing the next evolution of that totally organically. And so, yeah. You know, you may have gotten into recruiting sort of by mistake, like a lot of us, and then fell into the RPO world. I kind of got intentionally as a digital marketer by both education and trade, went into recruiting because I saw how transformative that aspect of digital marketing would be to the industry. And then I accidentally fell into the RPO world, right? You know, and so let me just validate what you wrote, you know, almost 3 years ago. And I read and I go, oh my gosh, he's essentially predicting just the organic thing that has now happened in my career. And so like, I don't know if you're able to check out my LinkedIn, but like, you know, I started in employer branding and marketing side and then became a TA leader in some fast growth organizations. And then very quickly, you know, marketing gets some resources. If you can push for it, you can get it. There's an easy ROI calculation to make. But in recruiting, it was a little harder, but even still a little bit easier. But when I became a TA leader at Glassdoor and then Twilio, and we were just growing so fast, I immediately learned the frustration that is resourcing on your team. And I looked at my, you know, just her leak, you know, just this crazy and ambitious hiring goal.
Yeah.
Right. And I go, okay, here's my options. I can either build up my full-time team, not knowing if 6 months down the road this hiring is sustained and then have to lay people off, or I gotta let agencies just come in and bifurcate my process and cost a bunch of money, or I gotta go to an RPO, which is more of the traditional RPO, which is like a 3-year commitment and I'm paying for them whether I'm hiring or not. And I go, is there another way? And then and then literally, you know what I did? I just quit. And I started my own agency doing just that. And then at first as a solopreneur, but then I was like, oh, I've got other, you know, TA leaders tired of that grind who want to help other TA leaders have better models and augment their teams. And then, you know, all of a sudden I had, you know, a company that was like three companies in one. It was one part, you know, staff augmentation, hourly recruiting, one part employer brand strategy and recruiting consulting, and then one part, you know, digital agency. And then it was just like a few months ago, and I think while Jim was searching for topics and found your article, I was like, what do we call ourselves?
Yeah.
Like, what's the term? Like, I'm not an RPO. That's sort of like a dirty word. I'm not a staffing agency, but people want to call me all these things. And then he shows me this article where you call it agile recruiting services. And I was like, oh my God, is that a real term? Is that a term? That totally seems to describe it. Like, how did you, is that a term? Like, you just pulled that out of your head? Like, where did that come from?
So I definitely made it up. And if it were ever to become sticky, that'd be awesome. What I was trying to describe, so I'd share with you the encouragement and the point of view I was offering to Randstad and a few other companies I work closely with. I've had the blessing of friends that are in leadership roles in a lot of these major blue chip providers. And I'm always sort of trying to gadfly, you know, what do we think the industry's doing? And I was also at the same time at Monster. So I was part of, in 2017, an organizational change, and we're looking to revitalize Monster. What I wanted to do, I'm a human capital guy, right? So I'm not going to come in and do the job board stuff, but I am going to look to blend technology and human capital to provide solutions. Yes. As you said, I'm asking myself, well, what am I? Because I'm not an RPO and I'm not an agency. And I wanted my value proposition to be putting wind in the sails of companies that have committed to their own TA competency, right? Like if you've decided TA is strategic and we want to do it, I validate and value that commitment. But I also know, because I've lived the trenches, that there are landmines and bears waiting for you in places you don't know. So I'm here to help navigate all of those traps. And I'll give you this service, that service, this service. You pick, right? And we're going to navigate all the unforeseen things that happen as you're trying to hire and adjust to the variables that talent acquisition faces when trying to support an organization.
Yeah. And I've heard some people call that thing that, you know, a talent solution architect, because you really are just architecting various services and technology. And it's really interesting to hear about your career and how you did it on the vendor side. And I was that guy. I was the technology guy. How do I leverage new technology and how do I build new processes? But internally as a practitioner, and I had points in my career, like at VMware and SuccessFactors specifically, where like, we didn't know what to call my job title. Like I was just making crap up. Like I think my first job title for the first job description I wrote at VMware was, you know, talent acquisition web strategies manager, right? Like, what does that mean? Like, who knows? We're all just kind of figuring out and calling it whatever it is that we're doing. But at some point, we need to name it as an industry. Like, is it gig economy? Is it hybrid? Like, what is this? So yours was the first, you know, sort of explanation taking in the, like, you literally wrote the blog post I was telling Jim to write. we're like, it's already been said, so let's just get him on the podcast. So just really, really. So where do you think it's going? Like, you know, like.
So I think we're going to. So this is a slightly sort of controversial point of view, and maybe the way I phrase it may lose a listener too. I hope I don't. I think the industry is beginning to dial into some of the more essential things that drive value, and I hope letting go of some of the more sensational and buzzy things that we think drive value. Right. So
I hope so.
A lot of the discussion about technology tends to zero in on artificial intelligence, and I'm an advocate. Right. I work for a company that is working very hard at algorithms to help recruiters make better decisions. I'm not a Luddite on this front.
Yeah, but I'm a big fan too. Yeah.
The experience I have and what I've seen is that the value for RPO does come from the architectural insight on how organizational design needs to match the needs of the organization you're recruiting for, right? So, for example, I worked with a pharmaceutical company that had an insane applicant draw. And so the right organizational design for them was a very flat architecture, right? And so they could have individual hiring managers aligned to individual recruiters. And the reason they could do that is the percentage of roles that required sourcing was very low, right? So the applicants are all fed and there's a lot of processing. I worked for a clinical research organization that didn't have that applicant draw. And so a flat organizational structure was too rigid and didn't work for that company. And so we ran tiger teams, tripods, right? Where I could move the back layer without affecting the relationship with the hiring manager. These kind of little insights into the way infrastructure and architecture of team affects recruitment outcomes is one of the things that the RPO industry is going to give back, right? And is going to help people understand in terms of how things work. And then the second thing, I love seeing individuals with your background come into the industry because I think, okay, let me say it this way. As a guy that used to design RPO programs all the time, I was always interested in what percentage of your hires come from applicants, right? Because the time cost in the organizational process to hire the right applicant is different than to source the right individual, right?
Yes.
And so I need to tie my design to the source channel mix. And then one of the objectives I have when I get in there is probably what you've done a great job accomplishing for your companies. I want to maximize the percentage of hires that effectively come from applicants. And yes. that's marketing and market relationships and candidate engagement strategies and drip marketing and all that kind of stuff. Now, none of that's the sexy AI stuff, right? But that is really high impact, high ROI activity. And the industry as well is starting to be able to effectively communicate that, hey, what we want to do is we want to mobilize your brand value proposition. We want to maximize your candidate experience to start onboarding before they get an offer letter. And we want that piece of the process to run as smooth as possible.
See, there you are again, I think explaining, you know, in a very, you know, educated way, something that just sort of organically we've come across, right? Yep. Where, you know, it is having that consistency. Like when we do ODR recruiting projects, we have a PM, right? They stay consistent with you. They're one of our lead consultants, but your recruiter might change depending on the need that you have.
Yep.
Another big thing I find myself telling clients a lot is like in the value of what we bring is that it's holistic. You know, I may have a company come to me and say, boy, I've got a real problem. You know, we're just not getting enough inbound applicants.
Yep.
I'm like, okay, that's great. That easy problem. We're going to run some campaigns. We're going to do that. And we get your applicant flow. And then they come back to me and they go, oh, but we're still not getting the hires in yet. Well, oh, well, that's because you've got some issues with your process. Let's optimize that. The solution is never just one part of this coin, and it really takes a holistic multi-channel approach from all the way from source and apply and attract through hiring process and onboard. And I love that you mentioned organizational design, because that's one thing that I think RPOs become organically good at, just because we have to be able to create new ways of designing teams to support these rich and different kinds of companies. And so And you know, I have principal consultants that have advanced degrees in organizational design for this purpose.
Yeah.
And we do predictive indexing and assessments of teams for this purpose. Companies aren't good at this.
It's very hard.
So now we're consulting on it. You know, beyond hiring, just how do you build good, productive teams?
Yeah. You know? And providing them that space, you know, like we all have sort of these expressions, you need some play in the joints to put something together. Like you need some wiggle room to get something to work. And having a provider like you or an agile service provider that gives a little bit of play in the joints of the staff allow you to make some decisions that you can't if you've got 12 staff and they are your 12 staff. And here's an example. When you've been recruiting for 10 years, if your job is to go through every day and look at 50 applicants, you might want to jump off a cliff. You might not, but you also might, right? By the time you've been doing it for 10 years, you want to advise, you want to do something a bit more expertise oriented. Well, that's a problem for organizations, because your greatest source of value is the applicant that wants to join your company that also has the skills. And so if you have a conflict between the motivations of your staff and your source of value, it's predictably going to be destructive, right? And so you have somebody else come in and say, look, you got great people. They're wonderful advisors to your business. They're good at strategic planning. They can help with talent management and working at career pathing your folks. But you've got this layer of value that's leaking. Now, I'm not telling you that means you need to outsource everything, but you have to capture that, or your budget will be out of control and agencies are going to take over and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's getting organizations to really think long term of where they're wanting to go and not just playing whack-a-mole and to keep their head above water of their current hiring, right? And I think one of those services that this just really plays into like every time is when a company is building their employer brand for the first time.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I have built global employer brands from the ground up internally and now dozens externally as well. And I can tell you, there is no firm that it's doing that first initial push of building out that doesn't need outside help.
Oh yeah.
This is for a couple of reasons. One, it took me years to build a world-class employer brand from the ground up without an agency.
Yep.
But what you need that extra help is because one, it's a lot of work, and a lot of times you need this done a lot faster than what can be done internally. But two, you can't read the label of the cookie jar from the inside. You need someone else. You need an outside perspective sometimes to look at your junk and to call out what you already know.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is the perceived value of an outside consultant coming in is higher. And so the buy-in is easier internally than when you're a full-time employee, because you have to play office politics. And that's what I love about the game I'm playing now. What I love about this way of supporting teams is I get to do all the fun work I love, but not to deal with the politics of getting it of navigating the internal politics of a more rigid infrastructure built company.
It's so true. And that's, you know, one of many reasons why the outsourcing and supplier side of talent acquisition will never go away. So if you think of like, what was the role of the court jester? Well, amongst many things, it was to say things that other people couldn't say to the king that they'd get away with because they could be called idiots. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, obviously, we don't want to be called idiots, but we can say things. You can come in and you walk out of the room and like, oh, that guy. Right.
Yeah.
You're not part of the inner tribe. You can say stuff that wouldn't cause political damage. Right. You can be controversial in a way that nobody's feelings get nearly as hurt as if it was the boss saying to a subordinate.
And there are times you need that. There are many times during foundational times of change that you just need that. And you're not always going to get it from making an internal hire.
Oh,
and I think you're on another point there that, you know, you don't always need that kind of firepower all the time. Like I get these startups that come to me and they're like, we want to hire our first TA leader. I said, cool. How many recruiters do you have? None. They're just going to be our first TA leader. They're going to do the roles, but also build our strategy and everything and to scale us. And I go, yeah, no, you don't need a TA leader. What you need is a consultant to help you kind of figure some of this stuff out, set up your recruiter success, and then let you ride for 6 months and then come back after you've got some infrastructure to hire a leader. And I just think people just think, you know, I just gotta hire the leader to build this stuff. And no, what you need to do is look at your company and think about where you need to go and have the help you need at the time you need it and not when you don't.
Yeah.
You know?
It's absolutely true. And you know, external advisors and conversations like that, they bring the person back into the conversation, right? So TA is seen so transactionally, and like, oh, we're just going to have somebody do these things. Well, that person that's going to quote unquote do these things is a person. like if they're a TA,
it's not a technology you're buying.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Do you think that they're going to want to carry 30 recs and do strategic design and build relationships for political influence and help you figure out what's your budget process going to be? Are you going to accrue? Is it going to be transactional? I mean, all of these things that go into lifting a department.
And I have been that person. I have been that director of TA, expanding into eight countries, holding 18 leadership recs, you know, and then managing a team of 20 people to boot. And it's not humanly possible. Probably the most stressful time of my life.
Yeah, it's the rhythm shifting that's really hard, right? Like we can do amazing things and plow through huge adversity if we can just stick to a rhythm, right? Like a set of rules in life. Like think about like intermittent fasting. Not that I'm advocating for it, but like I don't eat before noon, right? Now, as long as you stick to that rule, it's actually not that hard. But if you were like, on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, I'm going to intermittent fast. And on Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, I'm going to eat breakfast. You'll drive yourself bananas, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I need a rhythm that I can stick with. And it happens to TA leaders and recruiters as well. Give them a rhythm, partner with a company that, like what you're describing, an agile outsourced provider, and allow people some sanity in their lives while still making sure that you get the core competency that you need to grow.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. And so like, what does this look like now? I mean, I'm starting to see more, you know, similarly modeled businesses to ours, not ones that do as many things, but more coming up, and I'm liking it and I'm encouraging it. I find myself talking to some of those people and like giving them some advice of how I'm doing. I don't think that there's enough out there.
Yeah. Well, I definitely don't think there's enough out there. And it's, you know, if you think back to like 2005 and 6, when RPO was becoming RPO, it was like slowly breaking terms with the agency world. It hadn't fully gelled into its new RPO terms. There's like an emergent process, and you've got some pioneers that are going to go out there and start staking claims on here's what the language is, and here's what the commercial structures are, and here's what the user profile looks like, and then sophisticate yourself from that point. I think we're there, right? I think we're going through that, and you see a couple things, right? So let me give like a recognition to a few folks that are beginning to create stuff like this. We got a guy named Mike Cohen, right, who affectionately goes by Batman in the industry.
I know Batman. He's part of our tribe, and we've done work with him. He's awesome.
He's phenomenal, right? And so he's taking an aspect of agile solution, and he's carving out as his expertise, this is an augmentation of a core competency that exists. So he did a project with a really innovative internet company that has deep abilities, right? I mean, I know the leadership team of this company. They're phenomenal. But Batman came along and said, but in this area, you need help. And you don't need to outsource your TA function, but you do need to outsource this. So you've got some sole proprietors out there, and Batman's growing his team. Another guy that we probably both know, I love listening to Shally Steckler talk about sourcing.
Yeah, I know Shally.
And Shally's done a couple things to create, and he's got a new venture out right now that's looking to create agile solutions. And as more people poke out there and start trying to try language that sticks, I think we'll see the same emergent solidification that the RPO industry went through from 2007 to 2010. Now, what I hope doesn't happen is I hope we don't have a mass liquidity event pursuit like we did in 2010, leading to huge price drops. Now, then you guys can go out and sell yourselves, because we don't want to see the prices drop.
No, same here. I was worried about that. You know, the thing that worries me on the pricing stuff is what one trend that I'm starting to see in this realm, which is the marketplace approach, which is we are going to be the sort of the Uber or Lyft of recruiting, where we get all, you know, 2,000 recruiters in a database. We let the client pick them out, and then they're at like some low hourly rate to engage, and then the marketplace gets like half of the proceeds, right? There's some use cases for that, for high volume recruiting or you know, things like that, but that has the ability to drive the price down, both on what the recruiter makes, or the solution architect that's bringing a more holistic. It doesn't allow you to be holistic in that.
I tend to not like that stuff. I mean, it'll sound like I'm just sort of stumping for high prices in an industry I'm in, but I as much as my claim can be taken seriously, I'm not. I think that
we know how much work goes into doing it and being able to deploy this service, and there's no guarantees in it either, right? Because it's on demand.
Yeah. If you drive value out, you are going to drive people capable of achieving value that great somewhere else. And you don't want to do that. And for me, a root cause analysis, what makes agile interesting, what makes RPO historically interesting, and even as you're describing going in as employment brand advisor, it's the strategic work and the diagnostics, right? So if you give a marketplace to a company, there may be some companies that have their finger on the pulse of what's going on, and they can decide, hey, this is what I need. But my experience with most TA departments is they need help diagnosing what's going on, right? Are my hiring managers over-selecting? Are they unaware that not having a consumer-facing brand affects my ability to close? Do I have a departmental challenge where my hiring manager defers to their boss for final hiring decisions, right? Like all of these little silly things.
They all treat the symptoms, but none of them actually have any intention to help the company find the cure. That's the thing that bugs me, is like every vendor with technology, that they're just trying to help one system symptom that they know a lot of TA agencies have. And they aren't thinking about and probably because the nature of their business model, we have a weird model. We actually work ourselves, if we're doing our job right, we work ourselves out of a job with a company.
Yep. Yep.
They don't need it which seems odd, but to me, and we have a value, do what's right. It's the right thing to do, because we're all practitioners and we've sat in their shoes, that you need us during a certain time, right? Whereas I think others, if they feel like if they keep on the symptom side, well, this is a symptom that's always, as long as we don't help them cure it, there will always be a symptom for us to get revenue from. And that part of our industry, that aspect of it, I really dislike.
Yeah.
You know, and it's why I started this firm.
There are echoes of this in other industries, and that gives me encouragement that this isn't like a fake phenomenon. So like when you look at like the systems integrator market, or like engineering firms tend to go in, right? And they don't tell you have bad corporate engineers. They tell you have a project where you need temporary support. I worked for a company that did systems integration, and I would go from one pharmaceutical company to another and deploy a team for a period of time, and then disengage, right? And that made a ton of sense.
There's enough companies that are bad at hiring, or just building hiring, enough new companies even, that you don't have to try to stick into a company and bleed them for everything you can, right? Like you really can just help. There is enough.
There's enough,
everyone.
Yeah, there absolutely are enough projects. I was telling Jim before we had jumped on the recording, an interesting thing that's happened. So the Everest report shows that a full 25% of contracts signed in 2019 are agile solutions. their projects of some shape or form. That was not true in 2017, right? When I was out writing the article, I was saying, hey, I think this is coming. Just two years later, we see a full 25% of contracts are in that format.
And I tell you what, I started my firm in 2015. 2016 was the first year. Yep. And, you know, you're starting to see that by 2017, I started to see that same trend.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have a friend that works for a consulting firm that does work sort of like this. And this is a beautiful illustration of how an outside perspective can help troubleshoot and get away from symptoms and into causes. So it was a healthcare company, and they were getting horrendous feedback on talent acquisition. And often, as it goes, when you get bad feedback on talent acquisition, there's a couple sort of go-to things. You're like, well, we need to decrease the cost per hire. We need to increase the quality of candidate, or decrease the time to fill, right? Like these common hit points. So they went in and they did this huge project, and by all measurements, they improved all of those categories. And they came back 6 months later and they said, how are we doing? Right? We did it all, right? We got you better quality, faster, at a lower cost, right? I mean, we did the impossible. And like, no, the feedback is still terrible on talent acquisition. So like, well, that's weird. I mean, when you do the impossible, I expect a pat on the back, you hear? So anyway, so they said, all right, we need to do some stakeholder analysis. We need to go in and do some of these interviews. And so they went through to interview the detractors and the executive team. And what they found coming in from the outside and sitting down to characterize the cause of the dissatisfaction, they found out that the executive team didn't like that when they used a Korn Ferry executive search team, it felt different than when they used their in-house executive search team. Their intersection with talent acquisition, right, was an entirely different intersection than the process solution and sort of the go-to metrics in talent acquisition. And when they were asked the question, well, do you value the cost savings, right? We're saving millions of dollars a year by using an in-house executive search team. They said, no, we don't value it. Said,
we value our time and our experience. Yes.
Fair enough. Okay. So let's decrease your reliance on the in-house executive search, right? You can use the Korn Ferry if that's what you value and where you want to allocate your money. And then we're going to take the pressure off the neck of the rest of talent acquisition, right? So that they can continue to function with some dignity and pride in what they do. And you can look at them. I mean, you had said this earlier, with the respect that you would look at a department that makes one of your largest annual investment decisions every single year, right? Talent acquisition is in charge of, for most companies, the single most significant annual investment they make. Yeah. And they're sometimes viewed as transactionally. So we came back 6 months later and everything was hunky-dory. They were using third-party executive search and they were happy spending the money. And TA had finally had a breath because we were able to diagnose what was actually going on instead of laboring under the delusion that we got to squeeze another 10% out of the time to fill. No, that's not what you need to do.
That's right. And you know, we talk to so many, you know, TA leaders and organizations, and you see how resource strapped they are. And, mm-hmm. you know, and I'd say, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, our sales process isn't a process of trying to figure out just whether we're the right solution provider for you. It's acting as a partner to help them make the business case and teaching them how to make that case internally, you know. So like, it, you know, if you're talking to a TA leader and they say like, how would you sell this type of model, you know, to an executive, right?
So there's typically a couple of hard costs that most people can identify with pretty quickly. Being able to quantify them is a different story. But my go-to is often agency spend and contract recruiter spend. All my agency friends are going to cringe when I say that. I'm sorry. I do love you. But the amount of money that's spent on agencies is often not well governed, right? So if I can help, the argument is not to take the money away from the agencies. It's to increase the percentage of roles that you're capable of filling yourself, right? And when you increase that percentage, your expenditure there drops. So when I was at Monster, for example, I'd often make the business case very simply that if I can prevent one agency hire, you can use my services for 6 months and break even. If I just prevent one agency hire, right? And so now, because we're both ambitious, I'm going to aspire to do more than that, right? And so you begin to be able to assemble a business case that not only has an improvement in the candidate and hiring manager experience, but also a return on that investment. And then the other one that I think is a really interesting business case is contract recruiters. love them, don't want to get rid of them. But here's a funny thing about how it happens. You usually need contract recruiters when your workload is spiking, right?
Yep.
When your workload is spiking, you're often firefighting and stakeholder managing, not worrying about onboarding and setting up your new contract recruiter to succeed.
That's right.
And so you've got this huge expenditure, right? They're about 100% more expensive than a staff employee at like a cash per hour level, right? Yep. And you're also feeding them less than anybody else. So your most expensive asset is being set up less than any other asset in your organization. If we can avoid that organizational practice, not only can I save you money on the contract recruiter, I can help avoid the oddity of when your workload spikes, you starve your staff.
Yeah, not to mention the management of all those, the contracts and when they expire and the administration of all that. You know, not to mention, you don't know whether that contract recruiter has the appropriate tools. If they have the appropriate business insurance as a sole proprietor that protects your business, like it's high risk. It's really high risk. And you don't know. Whereas like through a model, when you're using a service provider that whose job it is to always be, you know, hiring and training great recruiters and know have an existing relationship, can literally get a recruiter that just did a very similar project with another client and place them with you. Right. You are cutting your time to productivity. You are cutting your time, you know, time to that recruiter being productive in half, maybe less, you know.
It's absolutely true. I love the use case of having prepared talent for times of spike. I think that it just shines value. And I know that's flowery language, but the reason I love it is it's concrete hard cost savings. I also think that the teams, they love it, right? So their workload spikes, and instead of needing to be kind and extra considerate to the new person, which you should do, right? They don't need to, because it's Jim. I know Jim, right? Jim, I need you to do that, right? You just dive right into the workload. The teams love it.
It's like, and it's like, let's go. Obviously, we were helping a TA leader, fast growing tech company here in Austin, and who was, you know, trying to build the process, but also had a rec load of a bunch of engineers, right? And through our model, we were like, we have exactly the right recruiter for that. Deployed them, 12 engineers hired, 11 weeks.
Yep, that's awesome.
Done, right?
It's like huge. And if a handful of those were agency placements without you guys, I mean, the return on investment.
They said like, half a million. They said half a million.
Enormous.
Healthcare company where they had two recruiters and 500 open nurse recs.
Yep.
We came in, hired 1,300 nurses in 6 months, saved them $2.6 million on what they were already spending prior to hiring us.
Yeah.
Like this model has a true business case.
Yeah.
You know, it not just in the efficiency, but in the cost savings as well.
So here's another, so this is a controversial business case. Carrying too high caliber, too much heavy firepower in your organization, is expensive, but it's also demotivating for the staff, right?
Yeah.
And so if I need 20 recruiters and they've all got 15 years experience, you're rolling tanks into a tennis mat, you know, like you are really too much. And you might think that like, we're just going to overserve our company. That's not how it happens in reality. The person with 15 years experience gets demotivated, right? Like if I've got the ability to do complex and complicated consulting and design work and close and navigate difficult candidates, and then you tell me that I need to go out there and review, you know, 75 applicants a day for the next 6 months, they're going to get demotivated, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so not only do you have too much on the actual concrete expenditure, you're over-resourced for the needs of the business from a capabilities perspective, you're also under-returning from an engagement perspective, right? They disengage with the work.
Yeah, the companies, they cannot provide the type of work at a regular pace that those high performers, high experienced people can continue to be excited by. Whereas like on my side, all my recruiters on average have 10 plus years of experience and they're all extremely happy because I give them new fun work every 3 to 6 months.
Yep.
A new problem in a new industry with a new challenge with new people to learn, like that keeps them engaged, and they're earning more than they would in-house, right? Like that's how this works, right? That it's the right people in the right type of, I guess, career rhythm is what I called it. I kind of, when I started my firm at Proctor Talent here, I was a TA leader, and I was kind of looking like, okay, I was at that company like 8 months, built the infrastructure, jumped. And I go, okay, I'm finding what my actual rhythm is. Am I an in-house guy or an outside guy? And I'm both. And now I get to be both. And I love that. You know, the one thing I really wanted to ask you about to kind of round it out, because I know we're getting close to time, is something I know we both will geek on. And that's the technology around this. I feel like we are in this perfect storm of, you know, companies needing to be budget conscious, but also companies in new industries fueling a lot of growth in new sectors and areas, plus technology infrastructure coming to bear within recruiting that now allows us to automate some of the administrative stuff in hiring to be more strategic and human, right? For a model like this to exist, like what is some technology that you're seeing beyond just, you know, AI, which, you know, I'm a fan of, but it's not going to solve all our problems, you know, that are coming that are going to really solidify this push into this agile recruiting services world?
So I love the data visualization tools that are coming forward to help recruiters make decisions faster. And so like there's little things like email plugins that give you a pop-up of other interactions with a candidate when an email pops up, right? So if you've got 40 recs and 500 candidates or whatever, and you get a message from Billy, right? It's nice. It's a delightful experience when you hover over Billy's email address to see a little bit of like, oh, here's the genealogy of Billy, right? And so then instead of procrastinating getting back to Billy, because you're like, I don't remember what he's for, right? The data visualization allows you to immediately tackle that task. Now that's not, so from a code perspective, that's sophisticated, but from an AI, right? Is it like the wild west of like, you know, AlphaGo? No, but it's a data visualization that materially changes the recruiter's experience. I love seeing that kind of innovation coming in. And then there's another one that we're working on actually that I think is really cool. It's a little data visualization hack, but one of the things that recruiters do when they're trying to, especially on the agency side, source, is they'll have like a fragment of a memory, right? And so they might remember that like Mary did Splunk engineering, right? And that it's just this little fragment of a memory. And so they go to their sent items and they pull up an email to Mary. So we have a data visualization tool that gives a word cloud associated with Mary's emails to help trigger other brainstorming to figure out how you're going to pull out other candidates and insights that'll help you get to the person that you're going to recruit or the place that you want to source, right? And again, like this isn't a computer beating Garry Kasparov at chess, but this is a data visualization that allows a magician, which is a recruiter to me, to figure out how to do it, you know, more masterfully.
Yeah, and more efficiently, and I think make their job better. I think we've been talking for years about recruiters really as talent advisors and how they really need to start, you know, pushing back on the business and be really, you know, more strategic and get deeper into the business. But like a lot of organizations don't even give them the chance to do that, right? They're stuck in the minutia. They're not giving them the technology infrastructure they need to actually elevate in their roles. It's sort of, let's just hire more recruiters. Oh, you're overworked. Hire more recruiters.
Right.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. And you know, giving recruiters that decision support helps them be prepared to ride into battle and gives them some of that, you know, I got your six type of stuff to help move an organization out of the customer service mindset, right? Because we say talent advisor, and then very quickly the concept blurs into customer service, and I get very concerned. Like,
yes,
you mean like McDonald's customer service? What do you mean?
Right? Not customers always right. Yeah,
because I may have to tell you some things that you don't love, but I do it because I want you to accomplish your goal, and that includes saying things you need to understand to get it done.
Yeah, it's sort of like, I mean, if I'm working a therapist, I'm not sitting there to tell them all my problems just to be heard.
Right.
I want, you know, actual, you know, I want them to actually give me a solution. I want them to tell me things that are maybe hard to hear that I need to hear. Right. Like it's same thing with everything else. Wonderful. I mean, really, I've enjoyed talking to you, Steve. It's been awesome learning about your career and you know, what you're doing at job.com, getting into blockchain. It just sounds really, really, really interesting.
Stay tuned for that. We've got some big stuff coming out on the verification of career histories. We've got some fun things that are going to come out to help make sure that just when we're looking at data, we've got confidence. And what I think will happen, you know, and, you know, mark my words on the prediction, right? Like this article was, we are going to have a standard of career data that then becomes an industry norm, right? It's like, I would like a verified profile. And we're excited about some of that.
Love it. Love it.
You know, I was so into the conversation that I forgot to ask Steve during the conversation how people get in contact with him. But fortunately, I remembered right before he hung up. So when I asked him, how can people get in contact with him for more comments, he said this.
Yep. So you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm very responsive, Steve O'Brien. And then you can find me at my email if you want to reach out to me directly at steve.obrien@job.com.
I miss Courtney. Courtney, don't take any more off days, please.